Good morning. Welcome to hour number two, Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. We're glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking a little bit about direct democracy. In many American states, citizens have the power to cut taxes, to veto laws, even sometimes to remove elected officials from office. And they do this with referenda, with initiatives, and with recall. The question, though, that some people have posed is whether this kind of grassroots politics really do make for more responsive government, or in some cases, at some times, does it more often work to the advantage of well-funded special interests? We'll consider the direct democracy, the concept, and also how that works here in Illinois in this part of Focus 580 as we talk with Chris Mooney. He is a professor of political studies at the University of Illinois. At the University of Illinois at Springfield. He also has a joint appointment in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's interested in state politics, with a special focus on legislative decision-making, on morality policy, and legislative term limits. He's founding editor of an academic journal called State Politics and Policy Quarterly. And if you listen to a program that we have here on our station, we broadcast it on Saturdays in the morning, a show called State Week in Review, you have heard his voice. He's joining us this morning from Springfield, and we're pleased he could give us some of his time. Questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Any point here, we welcome questions, comments from people who are listening. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to keep their comments brief so that we can keep moving along and get in as many different people as possible. But your questions are welcome. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Professor Mooney, hello.
Hi, David.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, my pleasure.
And I wanted to try and do a couple of things to talk about this, in a sense, generally, to talk about the state of Illinois. And one thing in particular I know we'll be talking about is the current effort. Whether it will be successful or not, I guess that's another question. But this current effort to have legislative recall, that is recall of elected officials here in the state of Illinois, something that's up for discussion now. It is something that is being advocated by the Lieutenant Governor, Pat Quinn, and has been an issue. Actually, he's been interested in it for a long time and is causing quite a bit of conflict and controversy as it's being debated nowadays in Springfield. So that's one thing. I want to make sure that we do talk about that. One reason for having the conversation. But just in general terms, there are, if we set aside recall for a moment, just to talk about referenda, legislative referenda, and also initiatives and what they are. They are, in a sense, similar and yet different. Maybe just give us the thumbnail description of the referendum and of the initiative.
Okay. Well, in general, there's three basic. The usual way it's described is that there's three basic types of direct democracy. One of them being the recall, which is sort of a special thing unto itself, and that's basically calling for a special election to either oust sitting official or literally have a new election where the sitting official can run against other people and so forth. Then you've got referenda, which are ballot questions that are posed to the voters by the legislative body, generally speaking, and it is sort of the legislature will pass a bill or some other piece of legislation, and that will ask voters what do they think about this particular topic. Sometimes those referenda are required by Constitution. For example, in the case of many constitutional many states to amend their constitutions, they have to not only pass the legislature, but they also have to be approved by the voters. Sometimes they're just for statutory advice, advisory referenda. They're not binding on the legislature in any way. But referenda generally means referred to the people by the legislature. Now, the initiative, on the other hand, is something that's initiated by the people themselves. And this will be initiated by somebody outside the legislative process, let's say. And this is where some idea for a piece of legislation or a constitutional amendment is thought up by somebody, whoever, usually has to be an eligible voter in the particular location, whether it be a local government or state, and they go out and qualify the question for the ballot by getting a prescribed number or percentage of signatures from voters around that locality or state. And then that gets if there's enough signatures, that gets placed on the ballot in a general election, generally speaking. And if it's a majority rules, it becomes law or a constitutional provision. So those are the three. There's also a variant, something that's called the popular referendum, which is it's an initiative really, but it's an initiative to recall a piece of legislation that's passed by the legislature. So even though it's called a referendum, it's in fact like an initiative in the sense that the people pass a petition and then but the question that's being voted on is really whether to repeal a particular piece of legislation the legislature already passed.
Yeah. So the big difference between the two is where the effort originates. Does it originate in the legislature with the elected body, or does it originate on the people side of things?
That's right. Yeah. And the common thread between all three of them is that the people in an extraordinary way get to have input into the political process, primarily in the policymaking process, in a direct impact on the policymaking process, or in the case of the recall, changing the election around a little bit. And this is something that, you know, it's not unique to the United States. Many countries have referenda, but they are not so well institutionalized as they are in many of the states in the United States, obviously Illinois not being one of them. But mm-hmm. There are many states where they use these things all the time.
It's interesting to me if you take a look at where it is these things exist, is there are some states that have all of them. And they most of those tend to be in the West. There are some states that don't have any of them, and most of those tend to be in the East. And in the Midwest, it's if you look at the state of Illinois and the surrounding states, it's just a big mix.
It's a mixed bag, yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, the reason for that is primarily because the impetus for this sort of set reforms, so to speak, was about 100 years ago, a little over 100 years ago, in the populist movement, which had its roots primarily in the West and in the breadbasket and in the progressive era, big P progressive, you know, fighting Bob La Follette and Hiram Johnson and all that. And it was those states that really, in general, really got their teeth into this sort of thing. The states of the East with a well-established political structure that were not, that didn't feel the effects of the progressive movement, the populist movement, really didn't adopt them. Though there are exceptions to this. Wisconsin, for example, is one of the hotbeds of progressivism around the turn of the 20th century, and they only have the recall. They don't have either the referendum or the reform, and whereas, you know, sort of right across the border on the northern border is Michigan, and it's got all of them. So
yeah, and what's interesting is that you see in the and how many of these things there are, big sort of swings up and down over the last maybe 50 years. It's been a good time for these things, and one decade in particular, the 90s, that was when we saw the greatest number of initiatives in the history of the United States, I gather.
Yeah, there is in terms of the longitudinal look at this thing, it's got very clear eras around again in the sort of 1890s. Well, it really starts in 1900 or so, and 1902 I think is the first one that gets adopted in statewide anyway in Oregon. And then the first 20 years or so, most of the states that have it now adopted it before 1920 or so, and adopted the institution of one of these or more of these direct democracy institutions. And they used them to a fair amount at the time. They didn't really use them all that much, but they were there. And then the bloom was off the rose, and they weren't really used very much for a long time. They were only used or primarily used for many decades only for the times when they had to be used and where the Constitution would in the state would require that a referendum in particular would be used for whatever thing, for either to amend the Constitution or in the most common use of these things is referenda for bond issues, for debt. Many constitutions require that that if you're going to have a certain amount of debt or have a certain level of debt or change the structure of local government, that has to be referred to the people in a vote. So that's all you had for many decades, sort of mid-century. And then there was a guy named Howard Jarvis, who in sort of 1975 in California got fed up with paying what he thought were exorbitantly high property taxes. And he, along with a couple of other people, sort of single-handedly rediscovered the initiative. And they put together enough signatures to get a property tax limitation bill on to before the voters in California, and this in California they call them propositions. Sometimes they call them measures, or sometimes different states call them different things. They call them propositions in California when they're on the ballot, and they put on a proposition which in 1976 was numbered Proposition 13, and Proposition 13 is the most famous of all initiatives because it really jump started the use of the initiatives by various groups, and because it was so successful, it was a shock to the system of California. Basically, all of the most of the troubles that California education system is having these days can be traced back to Proposition 13. California went from sort of being the leading educational having the best education, public education, K through graduate school in the country, and to having, some of the worst since that time. But, that's another issue about the effects. But the key thing was that Howard Jarvis and his group with Proposition 13 showed that this could be an effective tool for those that were highly interested to get public policy to bypass the legislative bodies, and so you had a whole series of what were called tax and expenditure limitation referenda or initiatives across the country in the late 70s and into the 80s, and then in the 90s, other groups besides the sort of anti-government property tax limitation kind of groups all of a sudden picked up the mantle, and you had, dozens of propositions and ballot measures in states like Oregon and California and Colorado on things marijuana legalization and AIDS, quarantining AIDS victims on islands, and all sorts of stuff. And also in the 90s, you had a big push in states for state legislative term limits. And that represented sort of dozens and dozens of various permutations of the term limits idea in state legislatures, state legislation and constitutional provisions during the 90s.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Chris Mooney. He's professor of political studies at University of Illinois Springfield. He has joint appointment in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. We're talking about direct democracy, things like referenda, citizen initiatives. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have someone in Belgium, the community of Belgium, not that far away from us, to talk with. Yeah, not the country, the town. It's in.
They might be more interested in Belgium because we do so little of this in this this state that I'm surprised anybody would be interested in it at all.
Well, that's obviously one of the questions I wanted to get to is why is it, you know, some places they do this a lot and some places they hardly do this at all. But we'll talk with our caller here in Belgium on line four. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. Sir, you hit on several of the things I was going to talk about or question about, and that is definitely the way that California has really limited its educational system, but in a proposition. But also, it's very much the same situation is going on here in Illinois, though we don't really have a proposition about it. In that the governor's not giving any money to education any more than he has to, and at the same time, he's lusting after the teacher's pension, which is also involves the University of Illinois. I know there's a little different program, but it still deals with the actual grade school and high school, you know, level of teachers too. And also, I wanted to hear your comments about how interesting Illinois and New York, to some degree, California. We have a disparity in our states. We have a very large city and a huge rural downstate population. New York has it the opposite, upstate. California, it's all over. But there's that dichotomy between what is good for a city and what they want to vote in and what problems it causes for a rural area also, because they don't have the same basis to deal with their government, if you understand what I'm saying. It seems like they should, but some of the issues in Chicago take so many funds away from downstate that we help supply to. If you see what I'm saying, they have a lot of rapid transit, they have a lot of streets to keep up, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and those sort of things. And I wanted to see what your opinions were about that. And also, I do listen to you on Saturday, and I'd like to hear some more comments about Mr. Blagojevich.
Well, you know, related to what we're talking about here, you know, one of the general points that we can take from this is the issue of the impact of direct democracy on majorities and minorities writ large, not necessarily racial or ethnic minorities, but any kind of minority in any kind of an issue, any issue you have. In general, you know, we have a democracy. We actually have a representative republic in which we elect by a majority for the most part of people to go and make public policy and we want them on the one hand to represent our interests, and so you would think that the interests and the preferences of the citizens would be reflected in the policy outcomes of the legislative process, but on the other hand, we think that legislators, whatever level, know a little bit more about the policy areas than we do. That they've thought about it. That they're supposed to take some information in from the various groups and the various people at hand, and try to study it and maybe use their own judgment and maybe not just sort of blindly vote on the preferences of the people, which may sometimes not be that well informed. When you go into the direct democracy, when you make policy through the ballot, you are in the most blunt way making public policy by majority rule. It's sort of all in favor say aye, and the ayes have it. And this not necessarily the case that everybody's as well thought out in terms of why they're voting yes or no on a particular piece of policy. So there are those that worry that the rights of minorities will be trampled by using direct democracy. So, in one hand, this might be sort of racial minorities or ethnic minorities, and some people worry. For example, there's been a lot out west of initiatives on English-only laws or depriving. Or sort of banning from social services anybody who's not a citizen or a legal citizen, and you know, and those are the sort of issues that you can sometimes, especially if you've got a lot of money and you can put a lot of TV ads on, you can sort of get people who are casually interested in this sort of thing and say, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. How come these people are illegal immigrants? Why should their kids be going to school? Why should they be able to use hospital services? You know, yeah, I'll vote no on that. And, you know, yeah, this is, you know, this is America. They ought to all speak English. So, yeah, we should have English only. And so that's the kind of thing that might pass in a direct in an initiative, but it probably wouldn't pass, or often they don't pass in the legislative process, because there are other issues and other sort of implications of those sorts of things that the average voter doesn't necessarily think about. So sometimes there is the worry that minority rights get trampled. That is an argument that gets made. The sort of research that's been done on it indicates that it's not necessarily as bad as some people might worry about. In the state of Illinois, if you've got if we have a wide use of the initiative, you might think, well, gee, you know, the rights of downstate people will get trampled by those urban and suburban voters in the northeastern corner of the state, and that may well be true. We'll have to see if that happens.
Yes, it seems that way. And already there's a lot of disparity between what goes on in the northern part of the state and the rural southern part of the state. And when I say southern, you know, I'm talking Kankakee South. You know what I mean? I'm not really trying to...
Anything below I-80?
Yeah, I'm not just, yeah, I-80, okay. I'll take that as a demarcation, too. But you see what I'm saying. There's a huge disparity, and there's other states, too. Other states have the same problem, like...
Well, you're right. I mean, you point out a couple of them. I mean, there are numbers. Any place that you have a big urban center, you almost always have the sort of offsetting rural area. Look at Wisconsin, they've got Milwaukee and, you know, Madison to some extent in the rest of the state. You look at Missouri, you've got two, St. Louis and Kansas City. Pennsylvania's also got two, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. That's, you know, Georgia's got Atlanta. You know, there's oftentimes that rural-urban tension. You know, whether and you know, that's one of the reasons why the legislative process may in some – and for the vast majority of public policy probably be preferable, and this is where I'm showing my bias, I suppose. Though I'm not, you know, that adamantly opposed to direct democracy. I think it's probably useful in certain major issues that are sort of values issues, not what we always talk about values issues, not necessarily abortion or something, but, you know, sort of constitutional issues about how we ought to do things, how we ought to arrange our government, you know. But on the technical issues, where we ought to be spending our transportation money, I think I prefer to leave that to the experts.
We're a little bit past the midpoint here. I hope the caller will forgive me, or we're almost at the midpoint. I have a couple of other callers I want to get to and to encourage others to call in and talk with our guest, Chris Mooney. He's professor of political studies at University of Illinois Springfield with a joint appointment in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. And we're talking about direct democracy in a sense. Talking about things like referenda and initiatives and recall of elected officials, things that are in place in many states around the country. Some states don't have any of them. Some states have all of them. Illinois does indeed have the initiative, although we haven't used it all that much here in the state. And there are some people who think we should have recall. We don't. Some people who think we should. We want to talk a little bit about that. The questions from people who are listening are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll move on and talk next with someone in Champaign, and this is line one.
Hi.
Hello.
Can you
yes.
Give some more specific examples, like recall was used in California recently, and has it ever been used elsewhere before? And what about this thing called the informed jury? Thanks.
Well, certainly. Well, let's talk about recall. We don't have it here in Illinois. There are some people who have been talking about it for a while, among them the lieutenant governor, and it's up for discussion right now. What is it that's being proposed?
Well, I think what's on the it depends. I mean, I think Representative Franks, who is sort of a bête noire of the governor in the House, his proposal is to have it be the ability to recall constitutional officers and state legislative officers. I think that's what it's restricted to. And in fact, some of the interior politics on this is that in the Senate there's a possibility that they may widen the potential application of this to, say, include local government officials, which would then increase the sort of opposition to it among local government officials, which might end up killing the thing. But recall is relatively straightforward. It's basically whomever is interested in ousting an official before the next election would circulate petitions, and at a certain they'd have to get a certain specified number, and then it would go on to the ballot. I'm not sure. Some places they do it in a special election. Some places they do it in the next general election. That sort of defeats the purpose if you do it in the next general election. But again, that's one of those details that varies from state to state. And I'm not sure. I think we're talking about the details of specific date on this is in the proposal in Illinois. I think that's a little further down the road. I've got a feeling it's going to be. There's a lot of other issues that need to get settled before that, if it's ever going to go anywhere. But usually with recall, the required number of signatures or percentage of signatures is a lot higher than it is for initiative or for the initiative. And that the idea there is that, you know, we should not be recalling people lightly. It should be done for serious reasons. Some of the recalls we've seen in recent years have been for, generally we used to think about recalls as sort of a way you deal with political officials or public officials who had done some malfeasance of some kind. For example, in 1988, I think it was in Arizona, their governor was a guy named Evan Meekum who he had this sort of trifecta of being impeached, recalled, and indicted all at the same time. He had lots of legal issues. And that's the sort of thing we historically have thought about. There's only been a few governors who have been recalled, in 100 and some years of its existence. But the situation in California a few years back where they recalled the governor, Gray Davis, and recalled and then set up a special election in which some 100 and some people were running, and the result was that Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected. That was done on policy reasons primarily. Again, you don't have to specify in general. At least I'm unaware of any of the constitutional provisions in the state where recall has to be – where you have to say this is why I'm recalling. I want to recall this person. They just basically say we want a special election to see if we can get rid of this guy, but you can kind of tell from the campaigns about and also the circumstances about why a particular person is getting recalled. Evan Meekum, on the one hand, he had some policy gaffes that people were not happy with. For example, he famously revoked or repealed the Martin Luther King holiday in Arizona. But Gray Davis was primarily about policy issues and about sort of poor management and the issues with the debt and rolling blackouts that were attributed to the state government and so forth. We're seeing a lot of state legislators in Wisconsin and Michigan in particular in recent years that have been recalled for policy reasons. In Wisconsin, there was some that were done and usually it happens for taxation issues. And I don't know if that's because it's the anti-tax groups that are most vocal or it's because those are the sort of issues that people are more sensitive to. But we're seeing a lot of that in Michigan and Wisconsin, relatively a lot. I'm talking still less than probably a dozen over the 10-year period, but that's a lot historically.
Just again, I have other calls I want to get to, but just it almost goes without saying that right now there are a lot of people around the state and in the state house that are not real happy with the governor. It is the case that some people, and among them the Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn, have been proposing that we have this recall provision. They've been talking about this for a while. But having said all that, do you think that now we would be talking about this if not for the fact that so many people around the state and in the state house were real unhappy with the governor?
Well, there's no doubt that we would not be. I mean, that is maybe one of the arguments to not do it at this point, because just to do it out of spite for a particular official who probably would be way past the next election before we could ever get this thing organized and get it passed and anybody set up the petitions, even if you get the thing passed before the next election. You know, we should, you should, when you're, this is a fundamental political institution in the state. It's about how the people and their government are related to one another. And if, you know, if citizens think that this is something that ought to be a tool that citizens ought to have in general, then, you know, that's perfectly fine, and many states do it. So like 15 states have the recall. So, you know, it's not a crazy thing necessarily. But on the other hand, if it's just out of a fit of pique because of a particularly incompetent or irritating governor, you know, that's not the best reason to be doing it. There's other things that can be done, like, you know, don't reelect the guy.
Yeah. And this is obviously here we're talking about something that this would require a change in the Illinois state constitution. So that's
right.
It's not an easy thing. It's purposely not an easy thing to do. It would take some time before we even get to the point where it would be put into effect. There are some people in Springfield who probably would think this would be swell if we could do it tomorrow. There are others who maybe wouldn't want to see it happen at all. And I guess the question would be, do the people who would just as soon not see Illinois have this recall, can they prevent – can they actually keep it from happening? We're talking about there's enough people who don't want this to happen so they can make sure that it doesn't.
Well, in fact, it only takes one person to not want it to happen, and it won't happen, and that would be one of the leaders of the chambers who can stop this thing. Senator Jones, if we don't want to talk about the politics of the thing in Illinois, Senator Jones has been, you know, the governor's sort of one last ally in the state. If he doesn't want to see the thing get through, he can, along with his with his minions, the people that are working with him in the Senate, they can stop the thing from happening. And we see, you know, just exactly that sort of thing happening already, because the person who picked up the sponsorship of the bill in the Senate is a guy named Senator Donnie Trotter, who is a member of Senator Jones' leadership team, and he has some serious reservations about whether or not we ought to be doing this. So I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon.
Okay,
it's really just, the politics of the recall in Illinois right now is not about the recall per se. It's not about reform of government, because it's something that the people ought to have, and it's a way of the relationship of the people to their government. It's about sticking it to the governor, because people are upset with this particular governor, and this is just one of many ways in which people that are mad at the governor are trying to irritate him, poke him, stick him, trying to make him look bad, and, you know, it's a piling on syndrome. It has nothing to do with government.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Oswego, next, line two. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I kind of disagree with you a little bit. I think the lack of leadership down in Springfield is the reason why everybody's upset. I mean, we keep getting told there's all these special interest groups down there that need all these special funds. Well, who's going to pay for it? And there's no clarity in budget. That's another thing. People want to know where their money is going. And I know for a fact, it's been written up and done the research on myself, that our governor has no clue when it comes to spending money. He wants to do it for his constituents, which doesn't benefit most of the people in Illinois.
Which constituents are those, you think?
Like California is kind of a – but I will say this. Having grown up in California, it has done wonders to have this. The second thing is –
And what do you think was good about it in California? Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, my folks, my whole family, I'm the only one outside of California, and everybody is, they don't have high property taxes like that. I just had a 27% increase in property taxes. And most of my bill, my property tax bill, goes to school districts. It's like every year they come up with another idea. We need more money. We need more money. And, you know, I mean, now we want to, you talked about, I mean, it's a wide open subject. The school districts alone, there's no responsibility for their spending. And like in mine, they want to build a pool for a small group of people instead of renting out pools from other places, which is readily available. You know, there's no sense whatsoever in how they spend their money. And everybody
does your school
down, and they still
I just can't. Wanted to wonder how you elect your or how you select your school boards. I assume they're elected, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's the whole thing you were talking about. We the people electing our public, you know, politicians.
Officials.
And I agree with you. It's who we keep electing. But the problem is there's got to be a fail-safe because there's no answering. What happens? You know, Blagojevich is no different than Ryan, than Thompson. You could go on and on. And I've been at it for 22 years. And every time we've had a governor, they're corrupt. How come? We all vote them in. We still get the same thing, no matter what side of the fence you're on. I mean, there's got to be some payback. There's got to be something. Because now we're at a time in this country, never before, where people are losing their houses. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I don't have any money. It's like, let's just put it to you this way. It's like sucking blood out of a turnip. How far do you go before you make your politicians, you know, responsible? Because this is what really riles me up, and you can tell. There's no payback. I mean, how come as a public citizen we have payback, but then when it comes to our officials, which are supposed to set an example, we don't. It's just, it's ludicrous. It's asinine.
So when you mean payback, what do you mean by that? What would you like to see?
You know, there's no, I don't want to say payback, but there's no, you know, answer for, you know, if they do wrong, then they should answer for it.
Do you mean like criminal stuff or just that they're not passing they're not the budget? You don't, they think they're being irresponsible with the budget, or are you talking about the criminal stuff?
Both. I mean, you know, Resco is going through it now. You know, eventually you're going to find out this guy's as corrupt as all the rest of them. You know, this is where the recall notice comes in. And there's a lot of benefits and there's a lot of negatives about it, but you got to weigh the pros and the cons and how it works. If for instance, Gray Davis, and I know this is a fact, if Gray Davis was still in office, people that buy a vehicle out there will be, for instance, a brand new truck would cost you almost $900 for registration. $900! You know, I mean, vehicle registration is very expensive out there, all right, because it has to do a lot with environmental groups and other small entity groups that have control over the state. And the same thing goes with, you have to be bilingual now in order to teach. You have to be bilingual everywhere you go. You can't get a job in a lot of spots unless you're bilingual, which I think is crap. It's not California anyway, by the way. It's called Mexifornia. And it's because we've given too many breaks to minorities that are in this country. I mean, there comes to a point where, okay, if you're here legally, I don't have a problem with it. But because my parents came over here from, I'm first-generation American, and there's a lot of people, especially in the Hispanic community, either the same way or upset about their own kind doing what they're doing. Comes a time in this country we've got to nip it in the bud. If we don't do it now, then we're all going to pay in another 10 years. And it looks like really most people don't care.
Yeah, we're drifting in all kinds of different areas. I don't know what how you, Chris, you might like to respond to what the call is.
Well, I think that one of the things you're pointing out is that that having the recall does give a sort of a fail safe. If there is some serious problem that's going on and it happens in between the elections, then having the recall is one way of getting them out of there. And in fact, not only that, but it's having it in place. And this is one of the lieutenant governor's arguments, is that it will sort of keep the elected officials' feet to the fire and let them realize, oops, I better be, you know, watching my back because this could happen. And so they'll be more reflective of what the people want. Now, if, you know, I don't know if it's as much of a deterrent to sort of minor differences in public policy or even, you know, major differences in public policy and more, because mostly what the recall is used for, like I said, is for malfeasance issues. And then that's why we've got law enforcement, typically in the form of the federal prosecutor. that is a slower process, there's no doubt. For example, if the governor, our current governor, you know, was to become indicted, and that's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility, it's going to take a while, and it'll probably be before the end of his term before they ever finally get to him. But recall might, you know, we might be able to move that along more quickly. But again, I think that's something we, you know, we as a state would need to think about in the abstract, and not just sort of as a knee-jerk reaction to frustration with the governor or frustration with the way the economy is at a particular moment, or even frustration on a particular issue like, you know, this the thing with the school district that he's not happy with, that they're putting in a pool and so that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's always times we're going to be disappointed with what our government does. I mean, again, you live in a majority and we live in a democracy. You know, half the people or possibly even half the people will be dissatisfied at any given time with what the government does. That's just the point of majority rule. And let me tell you, if you get the direct democracy sort of making public policy, that's no guarantee that you will be on the side that wins every time.
Yeah. Chris Mooney is our guest. He's professor of political studies at the University of Illinois Springfield with a joint appointment in the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. We're talking a little bit about direct democracy, the idea of the referendum, the initiative, and also we wanted to talk, as we have been, about the recall of elected officials, something that is at least now up for discussion here in the state of Illinois. Whether or not that's going to happen or not, it seems pretty remote, but it's being seriously discussed around the state. Questions welcome. We have a couple of people here, and maybe about 10 minutes left, a little bit less. We'll go next to Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Yes. I've been watching the carnival out in California, too, and I think I come to somewhat different conclusions than the previous caller. But anyway, it seems to me that the main problem with the referendum in California has been that it's much too easy for moneyed interests to take over the process. Would there be a way of limiting this? I suppose with our Supreme Court equating money and spending with free speech, that probably there isn't.
Well, yeah, you've hit the. That's an extremely good point. Many people these days are very concerned with that. I mean, it's the irony is that this was a sort of populist, progressive era idea to sort of circumvent what were seen as corrupt legislators. Tours that were, and at the time very much were in a lot of places where money was freely changing hands, especially with railroad interests and the larger interests, especially water interests out in California. But now the referenda that are, I mean, sorry, the initiatives that are being successful require a very oftentimes a large expenditure not only to run the campaign but also just to get the signatures in the first place. There's a whole industry that's sprung up that is the signature gathering industry, and that they are basically consultants that's what they do, is they get signatures. And you know, and so it's very expensive. It's not sort of little guy at the kitchen table saying, "My God, there ought to be a law," and going out and getting it done. It's an industry.
The experience I've had in this state, I actually come from Wisconsin, and I'm quite in sympathy with the progressive initiatives. But in this state, it seems to me initiative is advisory as a rule, and that it has much less chance for mischief.
In Illinois?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Illinois is a funny we are classified as an initiative state. In fact, we do have the initiative, but it's an incredibly tiny provision in our Constitution. And the only initiative that's allowed under our Constitution is for amendments to the legislative article in the Constitution, and they can only be limited to what the Constitution calls structural and procedural subjects. That's a very – I mean, so it can't be on, you know, tax and expenditures. It can't be on anything else. It has to be on only the legislature and only on the structures. That's why we've only had one in the – sort of almost 40 years that we've been under this current constitution. And that was the cutback amendment in 1980, where we brought the legislature. And, you know, that's where, as many will remember, that's where Pat Quinn made his bones, is that he was the one that was pushing that, and it was his group, and then, you know, and then, you know, made his claim to fame. So.
And in retrospect, it isn't altogether certain it was true reform. There is another area, though. The townships have referendum.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, by and large, I think, advisory, rarely used, although here in Urbana and in Champaign they have been over the last 3 years used. In one case, advising the state legislature, I believe, to request that Congress bring the troops home or something to that effect.
Yeah, number of townships did that a couple of years ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are, yeah, the advisory referenda, and they can have advisory referenda, advisory initiatives. And we're actually, there's a group now that's circulating petitions that try to define marriage as a statewide advisory initiative, define marriage as between one man and one woman. You know, those are, that's, and the legislature or a local legislative body can also put something put a referendum on the ballot. Referendum on the ballot to is an advisory question too, and those are, again, they're only advisory. They're just trying to make a point, and they don't, you know, there's a little political pressure or something like that. But they don't have any legal binding status. But the one place we do use referendum a lot that are legally binding, and that has to do with local governments trying to make changes in their debt limits or in their structure of government. So we do see those coming up from time to time.
Yeah. I want to try and get at least one more caller in the time that remains. We're pretty short on time, but we'll go to now Champaign County, and I believe that's line one. Hello?
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, on this subject of the township referendum, they didn't work out this because I guess they went away from the broad policy issues. I don't know exactly why. It had to do with ranked voting, rankled local Democrats. But I'm also concerned if you know about this something that passed the House and is waiting to go to the Senate rules, and it would change apparently some powers that be have found the advisory questions annoying enough that they are actually going to try and limit their scope to, you know, something that the township actually has direct control on or something to that extent, so that broader idea of English New England town meeting, progressive era referendum, public questions is apparently being throttled back at the state level as well as locally by a variety of ways. These referendum were overwhelmingly passed, by the way, too. I've read a number of people complaining about the referendum, and they were quite successful in the past. So, do you know about this legislation? It's
I don't actually. That's news to me. I would kind of be surprised if it would pass, because, I mean, on the one hand, yes, it's a sort of inside baseball, and that's, you know, and they are annoying to the powers that be. I can see how they might not like them too much. But on the other hand, it's, you know, these sort of direct democracy things are good politics. They look good. It's very difficult to for a public official to stand up there and say, no, I don't think, you know, these voters are too stupid. They should not be allowed to have a say. And especially if it's just an advisory thing where it really has no legal impact. It's, you know, it seems hard it would be a tough vote, except for the fact that it's kind of maybe quiet and under the radar. And but I would think that anybody that voted against it, that would be the kind of vote that opposition research could easily dig up and use against them in the following election. So that would be the kind of thing I would worry about if I was voting on it.
Right. Well,
as a legislator.
It seems to have passed the House, like I said, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully
yeah.
it'll be stopped, because I think we need more of these public questions and actually more direct democracy. It's interesting to note that there was a lot of talk about Hugo Chavez in Venezuela changing the Constitution, but they weren't taking recall away, so they can actually stop the in the middle of the term. They can have a recall petition and remove the El Presidente. So it wasn't as dictatorial as it seems, as it was portrayed. But that's a pretty far field. But I think this populist era stuff is well worth taking seriously. And the New England town meeting traditions also. I mean, public questions was a big thing in the Chautauqua. Now, those were strictly advisory and strictly just sort of entertainments in some ways. They devolved to that. But the people going to public meetings and being seized with questions is important way that opinion is shaped, or could be if we weren't all just listening to the radio, I guess. Anyway,
well, there's a,
this is the town meeting of the radio, though, of course.
It's a good point you make that there's there are advocates of direct democracy who argue, and in fact there's been a good deal of research to show that this is the case, that they have a strong educative component, that people get interested in them. They learn a little bit more about public policy. They hear the debates. Sometimes it's drowned out by interest groups and lots of money. But people do apparently learn about the issues and have fairly well-informed votes when they go to cast their ballots on these things. So there's a there's something to be said for them in terms of the democratic process.
We're going to have to stop. We've just come to the end of the time. I want to say to our guest, Christopher Mooney, thanks very much. He's a professor of political studies at the University of Illinois, Springfield. He also has a joint appointment with the U of I Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's interested in state politics and policy. He's founding editor of the journal State Politics and Policy Quarterly. And if you're interested in state government here in the state of Illinois, you should be listening to a program that we have here on our station Saturday mornings at 11. It's State Week in Review, and Chris is often a guest on that program. Thanks very much for giving us some of your time today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dave.